Good morning, listeners. I'm Dr. Shortland, and I've been brought to you here today by I Got That. And after today, you're going to have a thorough understanding on how a specific disease affects individuals. A disease is an abnormal condition affecting a living organism. Diseases are generally understood to be a medical condition that involve a pathological process associated with a specific set of symptoms. Diseases affect each individual differently, along with some people having access to vaccines and other medicines. The human body has three lines of defense to help prevent said diseases, but often pathogens are still able to penetrate these defenses.
Now, before we get into things, this podcast was brought to you today by the Australian Heart Foundation, supporting Dr. Shortland, leading paediatrician majoring in heart diseases. Our activities have been funding cardiovascular research, supporting health professionals in their practice, developing health promotion activities, information, and educating the public and assisting people with cardiovascular disease. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more info.
I'll be discussing an infective endocarditis, also called bacterial endocarditis. It is an infection caused by bacteria that enter the bloodstream and settle in the heart lining, a heart valve, or a blood vessel. This means endocarditis affects the cardiovascular system, a closed system of the heart and the blood vessels. It can be thought of as the transport system of the body. There are three main components: the heart, the blood vessels, and the blood itself. The heart is the system's pump, and the blood vessels are like delivery routes. Blood can be thought of as a fluid which contains the oxygen and the nutrients the body needs and carries the waste which need to be removed. This means the normal function of the heart is essential to be a healthy individual, as the heart links to all other organs in the body, providing the oxygen for the organs to function correctly. A healthy regular heart is divided into four chambers, consisting of two atria and two ventricles. The atria receive blood while the ventricles pump blood. The right atrium receives blood. Blood then moves to the right ventricle where it is pumped into the lungs. This information was gathered from heart.org. There are many alternate diseases that also affect the cardiovascular system, such as angina, aneurysms, and aortic dissection. Angina is a type of chest pain caused by reduced blood flow to the heart and is a symptom of coronary artery disease. It feels like squeezing, pressure, heaviness, tightness, or pain in the chest. It can be sudden or reoccur over time. Depending on severity, it can be treated by lifestyle changes, medication, angioplasty, or surgery. Angina is caused by insufficient blood flow to the muscles of the heart. Even though the heart is full of blood, this blood is about to be pumped through the body. The muscles in the heart need their own supply of blood. That blood is carried through the coronary arteries, which sit on the outside of the heart. If you have coronary artery disease, then these arteries have become narrowed by fatty deposits known as plaques. Narrowed arteries can't carry as much blood as they should. The lack of blood causes angina. An aneurysm is a bulge in an artery or vein, usually caused by weakening of the blood vessel wall. They can be harmless as long as they don't rupture, and they probably won't cause any problems. However, sometimes aneurysms can burst because the vessel wall is weakened. This can be very dangerous, causing bleeding and even death. Aneurysms can be congenital, that is, people can be born with them, and they are more common in some families. They are often due to gradual weakening of the wall of an artery or vein. This can be due to high blood pressure or high cholesterol levels or smoking. An aneurysm can be caused by an accident or injury that damages the artery vein, such as a head injury. Next, the aorta is a blood vessel about the thickness of a garden hose that carries blood from the heart through the center of the chest and into the abdomen. Aortic dissection is where there is a tear in the innermost wall of the aorta. The layers of the wall come apart and blood surges in between. This is called dissection. It can cause the aorta to rupture and affect how much oxygen is delivered to the body's organs. And there are two types of aortic dissection. Type A is where the tear is in the upper part of the aorta. This is the most common and the most dangerous type. Type B is where the tear is in the lower part of the aorta. Aortic dissection occurs because an area of the aortic wall is weak. This can happen due to high blood pressure, an injury, or because you were born with a weakness. In rare cases, aortic dissection can be caused by using cocaine, having an infection, or weightlifting. Epidemiology relates to all of these diseases and conditions that relate to the structure and function of the cardiovascular system and heart. Now, time for some stats. An estimated 6.5 million people in the United States have an unruptured brain aneurysm, or 1 in 50 people. The annual rate of rupture is approximately 8 to 10 per 100,000 people. Also in the United States, about 10 million people have angina, and it is newly diagnosed in about 500,000 people each year. Aortic dissection occurs in about 2 out of every 10,000 people. It can affect anyone, but most often seen in men ages 40 to 70. We now have a story of a real patient who will be joining us shortly. A 61-year-old diabetic man injured his toe, which became infected, and subsequently developed an infection of the bone, which failed to respond to treatment, and the toe was amputated. Several months later, he suddenly became ill with high fever and rigors, and he was admitted to the hospital. Examination of the heart revealed a murmur caused by regurgitant flow through the mitral valve. Blood culture yielded golden staph, and his fever was temporarily reduced by intravenous antibiotic therapy. However, the next day his temperature suddenly rose and his heart rate rose and his blood pressure fell. Now, a warm welcome to Joe, our patient who was diagnosed.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is how we ensured that I was diagnosed correctly with infective endocarditis. As the doctors suspected I had IE, my blood was tested for bacteria. They also conducted a complete blood count check for anemia, as a shortage of red blood cells can occur with IE. I then underwent an echocardiogram, an ultrasound of the heart that works by passing sound waves through the body to produce an image. I had an ultrasound wand placed on my chest for the procedure. However, they also could have placed a smaller device down my throat and into the esophagus, which would have offered a more detailed image if one was required. The echocardiogram looks for damaged tissue, holes, or other structural changes in your heart valve. They then ordered an electrocardiogram. An EKG monitors the electrical activity of the heart. This painless test can find a regular heartbeat caused by endocarditis. They then also performed imaging tests to check if my heart was enlarged, and were also able to detect signs of the infection spreading. Such tests include a chest x-ray, CT scan, and MRI. My next stage is treatment.
IE can cause irreversible damage to the heart. If it's not caught and treated quickly, it can become life-threatening. You will need to be treated in a hospital to prevent the infection from getting worse and causing complications. Back to Joe.
While in the hospital, my vital signs were monitored. I was given antibiotics through a drip. Once I go home, I will continue with oral or IV antibiotics for at least 4 weeks. During this time, I will keep visiting my doctor, and regular blood tests will check that the infection is going away. Surgery may be needed if my heart valves have been damaged. The surgeon may recommend repairing the heart valve depending on the effectiveness of the antibiotics, as some medications are not always effective for infections of the heart. The valve can also be replaced using a new valve made from either animal tissue or artificial materials.
Thanks for that, Joe. Hope to see you soon. As we discovered that Joe's heart valves were too damaged for antibiotic treatment, surgery involving artificially repairing the heart valve is the most suitable option. Now, time for prevalence. The prevalence of congenital heart disease in the adult population is steadily increasing, as a substrate of prosthetic material and residual lesions constantly evolving as surgical techniques change over time, predispose these patients to the potentially devastating complication of IE. As technological advances become more prevalent within Australia, the chance of getting IE increases.
An incidence rate of 3 to 10 cases in every 100,000 people within Australia. However, this number continues to rise. It extracts a high cost for society worldwide, with a US incidence of 10,000 to 15,000 cases each year. Along with increasing use of medical technologies, people who abuse drugs are also at a higher risk of contracting the disease. And as drugs become more readily available to the population, risk factors also rise.
Within Northern Australia, particularly in Aboriginal communities, the incidence rate of the disease is higher than other populations. The rate of IE was 6.5 in every 100,000 persons per year. Catherine A. Baskerville's study showed that the contraction of the disease was directly linked to rheumatic heart fever. Epidemiology is the branch of medicine which deals with the incidence, distribution, and possible control of diseases and other factors relating to health. A key feature of epidemiology is the measurement of a disease and outcomes in relation to a population at risk. The population at risk is the group of people, healthy or sick, who could be counted as cases if they had the disease being studied. To gather more information about IE, we should be tracking all the patients who are at risk after having some type of medical surgery, such as pacemakers. This would allow us to discover the rates of people that contract the disease after having these modifications, revealing the true risk at hand. Learning which group of people is most at risk is a fundamental aspect of prevention and control of the disease. This can be done by tracking patients, the mortality rates, and where the disease is most prevalent.
IE, initially found more than 350 years ago, involves infection of the endocardial surface of the heart. The clinical manifestations of IE can involve every organ system, and the cardiac manifestations can include valvular vegetation, abscesses, and more. Endocardiography is crucial in the diagnosis of IE, but alternative imaging modalities are playing an increasing role in the diagnosis and management of IE. Multidisciplinary care is imperative to the management of IE, often requiring the expertise of cardiologists, cardiothoracic surgeons, infectious disease specialists, radiologists, and neurologists. This information was provided from Mayo Clinics.
Thanks for that, Dr. Weaver. This has led to heavy research on the disease, primarily in early diagnosis, as the mortality rates of this disease are so high. Currently, epidemiologists are researching what bacteria causes this disease the most. There are three main types of bacteria that cause the disease. The research currently being undertaken is trying to find other pathogens and bacteria that cause infective endocarditis. Learning what bacteria is the most common cause of the disease is essential in prevention and treatment, as we can now locate who is most at risk and have the most suitable treatment plan readily available. The international scholarly research notice performed a study of clinical, microbiological, and echocardiographic profile of patients of IE. It strived to uphold the evolving clinical profile and its outcome from a government tertiary care hospital in northern India. It was a descriptive, cross-sectional, observational study conducted over 2 years, involving 44 patients diagnosed with definite infective endocarditis, according to modified Jukes criteria. Demographic, clinical, microbiological, and echocardiographic data were analysed. This allowed the researchers to help develop actions to take against the disease, along with learning the morbidity rates and the chances of ridding the disease. This is quoted from the National Library of Medicine. This campaign has been backed entirely by current research practices, all gathered from trustable sources, along with hearing the experience of a real-life patient. Thank you for listening to my podcast, brought to you by I Got That. I hope you are educated with all aspects of IE. Now for some special mentions which assisted me in gathering my information. HeartDoc.org, Lumen Learning, Healthline, Health Direct, Mayo Clinic, Health Engine, and many others listed down below. And last but definitely not least, shout out to Mr. Finlayson and Miss Warwick. Have a great day. This podcast featured Darren Shortland, Joel Shortland, Dr. Riley Shortland, and Malia Weaver. Thank you.